At this time, I'd like to call to order a special joint meeting for a study session of the City Council, the successor agency, the Housing Authority, for May 24th at 4 o'clock. Roll call.
Mayor, Council Agency Authority Member Taylor.
Here.
Council Agency Authority Member Van.
Here.
Council Agency Authority Member Warren is excused. Vice Chairman Mayor Pro Tem Ramirez is also excused. Chairman Mayor Shaver.
Present.
Mayor, if you'd like to conduct the pledge at this time.
Sure. If you'll all please rise. Chief, if you'll lead us, please. Thank you, Chief. Our special orders of the day under new business is the introduction of a proposed fiscal 2022-23 operating and capital budget. Michelle?
Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor and members of the City Council. I am joined here with the City's Accounting Manager, CM Lucox, to present you with the City's proposed budget for the fiscal year 22-23. We also have members from the Orange County Sheriff's Department who will be available for questions during the presentation. This afternoon, we will provide you an overview of our proposed general fund budget. We will review our one-time expenditure requests we have in the budget for Council to provide direction on whether you would like any or all of those to be included in the adopted budget we bring to you in June. We will highlight some budget requests outside the general fund, and we will finish with a review of our CIP plan for fiscal year 22-23. To get things started with the general fund, here's a snapshot of where the general fund stands, that excluding any of our one-time expenditure requests. So right now, we have in our proposed budget, if nothing changes, our revenues exceeding expenditures by $710,450. Total general fund revenues are expected to increase from $28.7 million at our mid-year number per the March 8th council meeting to $29.1 million, which is a 1.5% increase. We have this chart to kind of show you the projection of our what we adopted last June, what we amended in our 21-22 budget in March, and where we are proposing revenues to be in the proposed budget. We have these broken out by our four major categories. We have property tax, Measure GG, can you be my pointer? Be the pointer. Sales tax, Measure GG, other taxes, and other revenues. So what is not included? Let's start with what is not included in these general fund projections. We don't have cannabis taxes in the columns that are titled other taxes. And that number does not include revenue from all 13 businesses that have a approved cannabis business permit. What is also not included in our other revenue categories is funding from the Orange County Public Safety Collaborative Grant for the entire fiscal year. The funding we have in the 22-23 budget is $76,400, which is a portion of the assistant to city managers position costs through December of 2022 only. We may get some additional funding with the state's budget is passed, and we may get some federal funding that could change those numbers during the year, but as it stands right now, it's $76,400. What is not included is the impact of the citywide user fee study that is going on with the consultant Wildan. Currently, staff is working on providing information to the consultant so we can come to you to update our user fees and then adjust revenues accordingly. Currently, the study is being done based on the 21-22 adopted budget. Once those costs are done, the consultant will add an inflation factor based on the inflationary increase between our adopted 22 budget and what gets adopted 22-23, so we have apples to apples when we adopt our user fees. And lastly, what's not included in our revenues is future revenues the city's expecting from recent developer agreements. We have, the council over the last 3 years or so has approved developer agreements for the Verve, for Lighthouse Project, Malia Homes, Brookfield. The city has collected some of those revenues, but we have not included in our projections any revenue we may anticipate next year or the following year in these projections, because those are really restricted by the purpose of the developer agreement. So we don't want apples and apples. In other words, we don't want apples and oranges. We don't want the revenues in there and not have the restricted expenditures in the budget. But what is included in these revenues? So in the property tax, we have a 5% increase based on the continued activity of residential development in the city. And this is pretty conservative considering our actual assessed valuation over the city has increased on average 7% over the last 3 years. In the sales tax measure GG tax column, we have a 2% increase in our 1% sales tax revenue and a 6% increase in our measure GG tax revenue. And that is because, one, of fuel prices still being high, although our consultant is conservative and not expecting fuel to be an average of $6 a gallon the entire fiscal year. And measure GG tax going up more than sales tax because the city has historically been collecting more than 100% of sales tax of measure GG tax compared to sales tax because of residents purchasing vehicles outside of the city and living in Stanton or online sales. In other taxes include our transient occupancy tax, franchise, utility user tax, and our new revenue number for fiscal year 22-23, which is cannabis tax. So we do have $620,000 of new revenue for cannabis tax. That represents revenue from one retail business and three cultivation businesses. So out of the 13 businesses that have an approved business permit, we have revenue from four of those in our projection for next year. I want to say that those, for example, the retail, the any anticipated sales or measure GG from that one retail person, the company is not in the sales and measure GG tax. So our consultant would update the sales and measure GG tax from that company at the mid-year. All we have is the cannabis tax in the other tax category for that business. And lastly, in the other revenue category, this is kind of everything else. You can see it kind of is volatile. It went up significantly at the mid-year in the yellow, and it's showing a decline in 22-23. That's because in fiscal year 21-22, in our mid-year, we had about $1.1 million in one-time revenues related to grant funding and related to $890,000 for a reimbursement from the Housing Authority Fund to the General Fund for the acquisition of 11870 Beach Boulevard. So some of those one-time revenues is causing that decline in the 22-23 category. In addition, we do have a 4% decline in our fees and permits as our permit activity in the building area is starting to level off from the projects we have been finishing recently. Moving on to our general fund expenditures. Yes.
Slide?
Yes.
You had mentioned that for other revenues, you're only including projections from one retailer and three
cultivations. Yes.
Dollars. Is it realistic to believe that all four of those businesses will be operating within this year?
Yes. Based on Jennifer Lilly's not here, but she helped prepare these projections. And based on her estimation, since the permits are approved, she is expecting those businesses to be operating this fiscal year. And actually more, but we didn't want to estimate 13 business revenues, not knowing for sure if they all 13 would be operating the full fiscal year, and will their actual revenues be what the consultant told us a type of business would generate when we were approving the ordinance, if that makes sense.
I appreciate that you're very conservative, and I
right.
like that.
Okay, general fund expenditures. Total general fund expenditures are estimated to increase from $26.8 million to $28.4 million, or 5.8%. So what is included in this expenditure increase? We have a 7% cost of living adjustment to the city's salary schedule. This number was estimated based on the Consumer Price Index report that was released for January 2022 for the Los Angeles, Long Beach, and Greater Anaheim area. That report actually reflected a 7.5% inflation between January 2022 versus January 2021. So staff is recommending a 7% COLA. We have an 8% increase in our contract costs with the Orange County Sheriff's Department. It is broken down on page 3 of the staff report, and while not 100% of the $900,000 contract cost increase is being paid for by the general fund, because we do have a couple positions being funded by our ARPA fund, the general fund is still bearing a $900,000 increase in expenditures, because the community enhancement deputy that was being funded by the North Orange County Public Safety Collaborative Grant Program per our mid-year adjustments we made in March is now being funded again by the general fund. If you recall, we did that when we adopted the budget last year, then we moved that deputy to get funded by the grant the mid-year, and now that funding is ending June 30th, 2022, so we're bringing that deputy's funding back to the general. About $274,000. And again, that could change based on what the color of the money for the state and federal grant looks like, assuming it's the same kind of expenditures or not. It may or may not, the new state or federal funding may or may not continue to fund that deputy. These expenditures also include, in the next column, a 3% increase in OCFA costs. So you'll see that their costs look pretty flat. For the public's, the transition of the building inspection services from contracted services to in-house, if we look at the community development column, that's why you're seeing a decline from the yellow to the blue, because we do have about $160,000 in budget savings in the 22-23 budget by removing the contract and instead funding a building official and building inspector position. Lastly, we have other staffing changes that are in the proposed budget that include funding two part-time positions. One is the both of these part-time positions were unfunded when the City Council adopted our 21-22 budget so that we could balance the general fund. Now that the revenue picture is a little bit different, we're asking to fund our finance intern position as well as a part-time department assistant for the Public Safety Department. We have a request to upgrade two vacant part-time recreation leader positions to senior recreation leaders, and to reclassify a code enforcement parking control supervisor to a manager position to align the city's organizational chart so that the Public Safety Department is organized like all the other city departments that have a director and then a manager as the next supervision level. And then lastly, to reclassify a parking control code enforcement specialist to simply code enforcement officer. So based on this, again, based on these changes, our general fund revenues over expenses are $710,450. We do have on the next slide some one-time expenditure requests. Mm-hmm. And so if we recall that $710,000 figure on the previous slide, if you look at the first subtotal, that total is 506,340. If the council were to approve all of these one-time expenditures, they could all be funded from the current savings, if you will, that were shown on the previous slide. So the first one is paving the Bell Street parking lot. The general fund, the whole cost of the project is $200,000 in our CIP plan. The general fund portion of that is 169, and the rest is being funded in the budget by discretionary capital project funds. The next is replacing a skip loader at a cost of $150,000. The next are studies that are $50,000 for a citywide comp and class study, $25,000 for a parking study, and $25,000 for a highest and best use study for the potential acquisition of the Bauman property. $50,000 is to repair equipment and software upgrades for the city's HVAC system, which staff would appreciate that quality of life improvement. And $37,340 for two computer software programs. $25,000 would be for an agenda management system to automate that process. And the remainder would be for a new recreation program software for the community services department. And then lastly, there is a new CIP project called Greening Stanton, which takes about $1.2 million. The city has collected $1.2 million from the developer agreements I previously mentioned for what is called public benefit / public facility fees. And the city engineer is proposing a project called Greening Stanton, where $180,000 will be allocated to next fiscal year to kind of beautify the area in front of block walls with shrubbery and things of that nature. And this $180,000 project would be the westbound Chapman area from Santa Rosalia to Santa Paula, and would be putting shrubbery in front of the block wall there to kind of beautify that area. So what would this mean to the general fund's fund balance and reserves if the council were to approve these costs? So the first column on the left is a breakdown of the city's fund balance. I have the total fund balance at the bottom, but I have the discretionary fund balance as the first bolded line. And, you know, June 30, 2022, per the mid-year budget, we're expected to be at about $22.4 million as far as the discretionary fund balance goes, which is about 79% of our operating expenditures. If the council takes no action on our one-time expenditure requests, our discretionary fund balance would be $23.4 million, or 82% of the general fund's non-operating costs. And if the council does approve all of the one-time expenditures, our discretionary fund balance would be $22.9 million, or 80% of the general fund operating costs. And the reason why I have the numbers in the middle highlighted in yellow is reflected related to the Greening Stanton project. So this is the $1.2 million that we've collected so far from those developer agreements for public benefit fees, and whether the council approves it or not has no impact on our discretionary fund balance, because that $1.2 million is set aside per the developer agreement for certain purposes. So if the council wanted to proceed with Greening Stanton, it would just simply reduce that $1.2 million available to $1 million available. And if we were just looking at the top number, because there's two different ways to kind of look at the percentage of the fund balance to operating expenses. Typically when we do our reporting to the council, we're talking about the discretionary fund balance. But if council wanted just to know what's in the top line, available fund balance, in other words, taking out the $13 million the council set aside in specific reserves in our reserve policy, how much do we really have if we don't want to touch our quote-unquote savings account? then that $9.3 million that we're expecting June 30th, 2022 is 33% of our general fund operating expenditures. And then in the middle, that number is 36%, and then lastly, 34%. So if you just kind of wanted to compare, I know when different council members are thinking about that percentage, they're thinking about it different, one with the reserves, one without. So that completes the overview of the general fund. Do we have any questions from the council? Any discussion points on the one-time expenditures? We're all here to answer your questions.
Thank you. Gary?
I'm fine. I understand the one.
Alice?
I have several questions, as usual. The first is, we had discussed during our talk yesterday about the Bell Street parking lot project, and I believe you mentioned that you would ask the Public Works Department to come back to what you at the time was.
Yes. I'll start with an overview of that question. And then I want, and we did get some information from the Public Works Department. We do have Mr. Wren and Mr. Jensen here if we have further questions. But I will just say that council could just direct us, if we don't have enough information, just not to include it in the proposed budget that's adopted, and bring this back later to be discussed either with the ARPA wish list or when there's more information. So one of the questions was, whether this property was supposed to be used for a future development site, specifically a future residential housing project. This property was included in the long-range property management plan that the former redevelopment agency got approved by the Department of Finance, and it was designated for future development use. In February of 2018. It has been used as a public parking lot in the meantime, and the Community and Economic Development Director said that since 2018, there was issues about parking and the impacts to surrounding neighborhoods. So that property currently isn't in the city's housing element. And so one of the questions was, why is this project being proposed? And there is, I guess the city's municipal code talks about there needing to be marked parking stalls. And there are issues of, it's not marked right now, of improper parking going on there. And so that is why this project is being requested to be paving. I'll leave it at that, but again, we could just get direction just to pull this one-time expenditure request and not include it in the proposed budget, unless you want to go further.
One of the questions we had yesterday was, what is the expected
useful life
lifespan of this project? If we were to go forward with this paving project, how long would that last, and whether or not we would have some development before end of that life?
Based on current staffing knowledge of expected future development, current executive team staffing is unaware of any specific development plans for that property. The city engineer said that the life would be 20 years, assuming we slurry seal it every 7 to 10.
And then do we know how well used that parking lot is?
So it is highly used. It has been seen as a good value to the neighborhood. Today, for instance, at 1:45 p.m., there were 41 vehicles. Typically, that populates to a greater degree at night, and you'll get into the mid-50s. It is a frequent area for us to conduct parking enforcement. We do tow a decent amount of cars there. Cars do get dumped there pretty regularly, but it's not overly a burden. I think you've identified the key element of it is depending on when the proposed development occurs.
So at 1:45, there were 40 vehicles parked. What's the capacity of that?
I would say approximately probably 85, 90. It is, as mentioned by Director Bannigan, it is a little bit of a free-for-all. We were using the telephone poles as parking berms, so it can get a little haphazard over there. We do our best to keep it in line, but we can manage without the project, but I think the determining factor is how long it is intended to be used as a parking.
Yeah, I'm supporting pulling this off the one-time list for several different reasons. Number one, we may need that property in the future for housing, or we might need it to do a swap for property, which we've talked about in the past. I think we can make some improvements in that parking area. We do have telephone poles, they're pretty good size and diameter down the middle. We could actually mark the stalls with either signage or some kind of a stall system. Do we have CNG there right now? DNG, I'm sorry.
DCG?
Yeah.
We do have some, particularly on the in the entrance to the lot, to try to minimize the track out. It does deteriorate over time, obviously, but with the dirt, it's generally speaking a dirt lot, but we try to have as much EG towards the exit and entry of the lot.
So we might be able to do something with that. We have Yule's materials here in town. We probably could work something. Other thing, do we have posted on the entrance to that park at your own risk, and then also limited time parking?
We do. We have parking at your own risk, and then we've actually designated that lot as a 48-hour parking lot.
That's what I thought. So we could do something with signage also, right?
I think we're in good shape on the signage side. Without Public Works does a very good job maintaining it, along with my crew. To be honest with you, just routinely making sure that the DG in the entrance and exit to the facility is sufficient. That's pretty much all we can do. We're in good shape otherwise.
Can you put the one-time expense chart back up? Okay, go ahead, Alice. Anything else?
And I have another question not related to Belt Street parking.
Okay, before we move to the next one, do we want to get collective consensus from the council about pulling the Belt Street?
Yeah, let's pull it from the other council members.
Well, we could pull it because we're going to be studying it next week. We don't want.
Yeah.
So we'll pull it. We'll either put it back on or just leave it off.
Okay. Okay.
And then, if I may, the next part. You had mentioned that the North Orange County Public Safety Collaborative is no longer funding the community enhancement deputies. Therefore, around over $250,000 of our general fund has funding that position. Is that correct?
That is correct, because the current funding the city has is an 18-month program, and the city's portion of the funding for that deputy was just through June 30th, 2022. So Ms. King is here if you want her to highlight that.
I'd like to ask, and perhaps Captain Alday can ask this, what exactly does the enhancement deputy do for our city? What is the value, and whether or not in your professional opinion that, that amount of money could be used for a patrol deputy or a health deputy or some other way to allocate those funds to us. Meet our needs.
Should I give some context?
Please do.
Prior to that, so the North Orange County Public Safety Task Force in 2017 was funded for $20 million, and at the time it went through June 30th of 2021, $5 million annually. The city of Stanton is the fiscal agent and still is, and we received $333,000 per year, and that money largely went to support and fund an additional community enhancement deputy, and then my salary and a part-time admin assistant. June 30th, 2021, the funding ended, and in October of 2021, we were funded again. The collaborative now was funded $7.8 million. It will also expand it to 11 cities now. So each city was allocated $118,181. The city of Stanton used that to fund a community, partially fund a community enhancement deputy. So I believe that's where Ms. Bannigan is referring to, that the funding ran out for that. For my portion, it is still being funded. So that's that. And then I think I'm going to have Captain Alde speak on the duties of the community enhancement deputy.
Good evening, Council. So, yes, that's correct. So June of 2021, the actual funding for the position actually ran out. And if you guys remember when we had the same study at that time, you guys had to make a decision whether we were going to fund that position. The way we used that position at the time was that it was proactively working on homeless enforcement and outreach, along with, at the time, was CityNet and the outreach coordinators as well. Collectively, you agreed to fully fund that position because we didn't want to lose it. It was beneficial to us because it also enhanced my deputy. I had a single man deputy who was, his sole duties was to be proactive throughout the state. And so we paired them together and collectively now it was a car to be able to do those duties of being proactive in the city. So once you chose to fund it, I went ahead and made that position what it currently is, which is the behavioral Councilmember Gary Taylor, you've had a chance to ride with it, but it allowed us to now make that position impermanent, and his sole duties are to collaborate with the outreach coordinators and only care for the homeless population and to do both the outreach and engagement and enforcement. That was when you guys chose to fund it, so I went ahead and converted it to the behavioral health liaison deputy. With that title, like I said, it allows him to fall under our behavioral health bureau, which entitles him to get additional training for de-escalation when encountering these individuals. And like I said, his sole job and sole purpose is to handle that population. 4 days out.
So that the community enhancement deputy is that behavioral health deputy. Right.
So technically speaking, though, the community enhancement title was incorporated under this funding from the collaborative. Once it was no longer there, the funding is no longer there, we eliminated that title and that position because, again, you chose to fully fund it, and so now that's when I created the behavioral health. So there is no such thing as a, as we speak.
Thank you. Chief, I had a couple questions. What are the hours that we have that deputy?
For our behavioral health? So he has the freedom to be able to make his hours based on our homeless population and where the need may be. If we get information that we have a lot of homeless early in the mornings in a certain area, so we've given him that information, and he'll adjust his schedule accordingly to be able to attend to that population, and vice versa. If we tend to have information that maybe we have some encampments, you know, setting up after hours, maybe in the train track area, he's got that versatility also to be able to adjust, to be able to attend to them. And again, this is in conjunction with our outreach coordinators. So at the end of the day, he does 4 10-hour days, usually Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturdays. But he's got the ability to adjust wherever the need is, at whether it's the hours or whether it's the days.
So there's 3 days without coverage.
4 days, four ten-hour days.
Three without, right?
Three without. That's correct.
Okay. I've been thinking about this, so I want to kind of pick your brain, and also Mr. Renz. If we took the $275,000 and we added a deputy, that would give us 7 deputies per shift. Is that the way that works?
Yes. So my staffing levels and the way that it works is I have 4 deputies come in early from 06 to 8:30 hours, so 6:30 p.m. Or so between the hours of 6 a.m. and 1:30, 3:30 in the afternoon, I only have four deputies covering the city. We split the city in four sections or four beats, and these deputies, these four deputies, are responsible for their area or their beat. Based on the need and the call volume of the city, there's some calls that require two deputies to respond. There's some calls that require more than that. And if, depending on what it is, it may require all four deputies to respond. So that takes away the deputies from their area, and that may tie them up. And more so, if I have a person calling sick, then I'm down one position, and I have three deputies to oversee the whole city for that time slot. If I have a deputy that goes to jail, takes them to jail, that's gonna remove them from the area for at least a couple hours. So during that time slot, and I hate to share this information because then the public's gonna know when I am very light staffing levels, but yes, during those hours, I only have four deputies until 3:30, when I have two additional deputies come on board. They'll work from 3:30 in the afternoon to 3:30 or 3 in the morning. And now that gives me six deputies total. That gives me the coverage for the city. Again, depending on the nature of how busy we are, depending on the type of calls that we get, because a lot of times, especially at night, most calls are not a single man call. Most calls are two man, and that's going to take them away from that. So 3 in the morning to back again 6 in the morning, I'm back to only four deputies for the whole city. And those are the where I highlight when I tell you that we have a high call volume. That's where my deputies are getting pulled. And my expectation for the deputies, obviously, they're assigned to their area of responsibility, their beat. My expectation is that they patrol check that area based on the information that we're getting as far as the our crime stats and our hotspots, where we're constantly getting either burglarized, stolen catalytic converters, vandalism, theft. My expectation is that they patrol check the area for that, hopefully proactive and squash that those concerns and those crimes.
Okay, if you just hold that for a second.
Sure.
Okay, so if we hired another full-time deputy with this money, that would then, we would not have that one deputy that's totally assigned to homelessness. That would increase our pool of officers that do their normal duty. And they would also be able to respond to emergencies with our outreach people. In other words, if the outreach people needed a deputy, that's just one more deputy that we've added in the pool that they could choose from. I'm not sure if the county will let all of our deputies respond to the emergency, but it appears to me we're at a point in time with the transient people to where if they're called out, we've already offered them help. And the reason why we're getting a need with our outreach people is because they're either doing something that's illegal or not illegal, or they're violating our ordinance or doing some kind of a crime. So to me, we've already gone through that phase of our requirement with Boise, with many people in this community, to where our outreach people have worked with them. And so to me, by adding another deputy would increase the pool of response, because I think our outreach people are able to handle most situations now, because we've been at this for almost a year and a half. That would then leave the need for any deputy to come out and to be able to help, which would probably mean that it would be of more benefit. And you're shaking your head, Gary, but you got to realize that the people...
No, I just want to say something.
No, but the people that are coming out, that are out there now, are the ones that have turned us down over and over and over again. And, you know, this might be a solution to it. I don't know whether the county's going to say that a deputy can't come out and assist our homeless people unless they've gone through the training program. But in reality, they're not using their skill in the training program to assist and help the homeless or the transients, because we're doing that as an outreach program. We pay a lot of money for outreach people. And so it's just something that I thought we might want to consider. Also, I had that question, what is the difference in job description between, is there that much of a job description between an outreach deputy and a regular deputy? And is that training available for all of our deputies to where we could get a balance of it? But believe me, I think we're at a point in time in this city where we need another deputy, and we need more availability of those deputies to help with our outreach rather than just one person. So can you want to comment, Chief, please, first?
Absolutely. So you mentioned as far as the training, what does the training consist? So as a department, all of us that sworn capability, we have to go through an 8-hour minimum course of de-escalation. Under the umbrella of being under the behavioral health, they have to do minimum 40 hours of de-escalation. We do understand that most of these people are drug dependent, and a lot of them also mental health, have a lot of mental health issues. And that's the reason that we go to that extra step to do the de-escalation and the de-escalation training. And they're also part of the Behavioral Health Bureau, which they're consistently getting additional training from the Orange County Health Authority as well. That's the beauty of it, and it also allows them to get any additional resources from the Behavioral Health Bureau. And they have access to the Bureau if we need to, for example, do a full-scale cleanup in the train tracks, and we could utilize those assets that the Behavioral Health has, which would be additional staffing. I know I mentioned one of the scenarios to Jared Hildebrand, was getting an additional behavioral health deputy to have 7-day coverage. One of the things that we saw, if you remember, when we first got Damien, for example, the homeless individuals knew their schedule. And so when he was here, he did a great job of outreach, but when he wasn't here, all of a sudden they all came back and filled in the city. You recognize that, and you got a second. You recognize that, got a third, and a fourth. The concern that I have now is the homeless also know my Deputy Hicks' schedule. And you got to remember that his sole job is to engage and do enforcement. My deputies that are regularly assigned to a position to an area, their job is to take care of the area and any calls for service that come within that area. We understand that the homeless is not, it's not illegal to be homeless. So they may engage, but it's gonna be on a consensual encounter situation. You mentioned that the outreach coordinators do a lot of engagement, but a lot of times, and Councilmember Gary, I could ask you and lean on you. A lot of times when they engage, they're doing on the outreach side, but when our deputy goes, it may not rise to a level of a criminal level. They may not be impeding the walkway. They may not be any camping paraphernalia, and they may not be trespassing. You and I know he's a homeless individual, but there's nothing from the law enforcement standpoint to enforce anything. So it's just a consensual, how can we help you? But we talked to our county council, we talked to AC and her staff. Does that rise to a level of enforcement when he's technically not doing anything legal? There's nothing for us to enforce, but like I said, you and I know he's homeless. So now are we stereotyping? Are we gonna go based on the fact that the outreach coordinator has every single day that they've encountered him, he hasn't been doing anything illegal, and he has refused their services, but again, nothing illegal, so there's nothing for me to enforce, nothing for us to enforce. So is that now considered a contact? And we've disagreed on that it's not an enforcement contact because they're not technically doing anything. Those are the challenges that we've encountered. Those are the challenges that we have. But again, that scenario that we presented was to have a second behavioral health deputy. So now we have full 7-day coverage, with Wednesday being the day that they both work the same days, and now they actually work together on their problem areas. One of the concerns that I have, like I said, we say that they're unpredictable because of, you know, they're drug dependent, chemical dependent, mental health unstable. It's having that fine line for my deputy. And again, I'll lean on you because you had a chance to ride with Deputy Hicks, having the fine line as far as officer safety, one of the things that we stress highly with the outreach coordinator team is to be able to identify that too, not to put themselves in a position where it might be an officer safety situation. So it's the same for us. So the expectation is that my deputy is able to see the situation, and if he needs to call someone for assistance, hey, if he's got now a second person on at least once a week, that alleviates that. If we need to go onto the tracks, that takes away a deputy, second deputy, onto the tracks, that it takes a while to get onto the tracks. So we have another emergency situation where now the deputy has to take away. That's the dilemma that we have as far as getting to and from. So it creates an officer safety situation. Again, you got to remember that a lot of times these individuals encountering someone in uniform may trigger maybe a bad encounter with law enforcement. And those are the reasons that we give the extra training.
Okay, can I
say
something?
Just let me finish.
Okay.
So basically what you're saying is that if we have a transient, a homeless, or a trespassing person, especially if they're identified as homeless, none of our deputies can do anything with them. Is that correct?
That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is we're deputy sheriffs, and if you call for a call for service, they will respond and they'll handle what the situation may be. If we have a property owner calling based on a trespasser that's trespassing onto their property, onto their store, the deputy will respond and address this trespassing muni code or penal code section as to that. Again, if you look at that section, both the penal code and the muni code, it first says he has to be warned. So we're going to ask the property owner, has he previously been warned? And we don't mean today. Today starts a documentation process. Today, did you warn him today, and has he refused? Well, I haven't. Warn him. After today, if we see you again here, now you're subject to arrest and or citation. But subject to be warned first and foremost. That's the trespassing law for both the muni code and the criminal code. It has to be warned first before it enforced any.
So how do you differentiate between someone, whether they have a criminal record, whether they're trespassing, whether they are homeless, or just a transient?
I can't generalize. You're going to have to give me more than
that.
No, but
what
I'm
trying to say is that if you're not going to be able to respond to help someone, whether it's our outreach people or whether it's a citizen or whether it's a business owner, if you are not able to respond to helping those categorical people without training, then doesn't that make your job almost impossible?
No. We will respond, but their sole dedicated job of a behavioral health deputy, his sole dedicated job is to attend to the homeless population. And he's gonna be there, not necessarily on a call for service. He's gonna be there as being proactive, working with the outreach coordinators. He's got that extra level of training because that is his sole purpose. That is his sole job. And our deputies, if he's working, our deputies may lean on his training and ask him to come and assist to de-escalate the situation. If he's not there, and yes, you as a private citizen call me because he's someone trespassing your property, we will act based on your call. We will clear the situation. And I just say that he has a different level of training that helps him do it as a primary role. But we will handle a call for service, depending on what it is. We will.
How difficult would it be to get our department that 8-hour training?
It's standard. We all get the 8-hour training. All of us get that 8-hour de-escalation training. It's the additional 40 based on the fact that he's a behavioral health deputy that he gets that additional training.
Would it be to our advantage to have that for all our deputies so that they could all respond?
Of course. Any additional training is only a plus for all of our deputies. But again, their responsibility is to handle the calls for service and is to patrol their area of responsibility. Are they gonna openly go engage with we know he's a homeless individual just based on what we see. But again, if he's not doing anything that rises to the level of law, of or enforcement, then most likely he's going to go after that stolen vehicle, or most likely he's going to go engage on that a gangster, or most likely he's going to go on and engage something that maybe could help us prevent a crime down the road. If it doesn't rise to it, then he, absolutely, he could engage on the consensual encounter situation. But if, like I said, if he's just in the sidewalk with his possessions to the side of him, there's no camping paraphernalia, he doesn't have a little tent up, he doesn't have his sleeping bag, he's just sitting there, not impeding the sidewalk, no camping paraphernalia, and he's not trespassing on anybody else's property, he's got every right to be where he's at. So you and I know he's a homeless individual, but what is my authority to try to enforce anything on him? Just because I know he's a homeless individual? Do I know that maybe that day he was got a shelter or actually is staying somewhere? Am I now, quote unquote, stereotyping this individual? And those are the dilemma, and it's a fine line. And like I said, the beauty of it is that you do have an outreach coordinating team that is able to do the outreach. The beauty is that we have Deputy Hicks who could actually go touch base with him and see how he's doing and engage with him and try to communicate and establish communication and see where we could help him. Because again, the ultimate goal is outreach, not necessarily. Those are the dilemmas that we have. There's enough, I hate to say it, but there's enough criminal element within the city where it keeps our deputies busy, where they, like I said, if it doesn't rise to a crime, they're gonna let Deputy Hicks go that when it does, when he does do his outreach.
Okay, thank you for that. Just Mr. Wren, can you give me your thoughts on a dedicated officer to homelessness versus an additional deputy in the community?
When executed appropriately, it can be a very valuable position. It's my perspective that we do not need a fifth outreach coordinator. We need a the behavioral health deputy to play the role in a law enforcement context. That has been successful over time and in the past. One of the issues, absent having that position specifically assigned to homeless-related issues, was identified by Captain Alday. If there is a priority call, a major call, and we lose that individual for the better part of a day, if something were to occur, that is can be detrimental to what we're trying to accomplish in the street.
So what would you like to see, how it's structured?
I would like to see the behavioral health deputy position continue. I think obviously there's always improvements that can be made in those relationships, but I think over time it has been very positive for the city.
Well, how many times has a regular deputy filled that role, either successfully or unsuccessfully, and is it something that could work?
As far as the actual long-term connectivity with the homeless individuals, they typically do not do that. I agree 100% that conceptually we need all of our deputies to enforce issues associated with homelessness. There are concerns when you have one individual to assign to address homelessness related issues that means the others don't at all. That is concerning at times, that we would like to see all deputies in the field address homelessness related issues. I mean, it's clearly been identified as our number one issue of concern by the public, but there is something, there is definitely value in having a deputy that is assigned and has over time been able to develop a rapport with some of those folks.
Gary?
Sure. May I ask something?
Oh, sure.
My curiosity is why you refer those questions to Director Wren, because
Because he's the other side. He is he's the one that works with our outreach people.
But
and
has
the outreach people work with you.
But it has nothing to do with my deployment, has nothing to do with my staff, has
okay,
nothing
I'm not
to do with my direction.
The information you gave me today was perfect. It was awesome. It was something that filled a void for me for a long, long time. And the information that you actually gave me gives me a very clear picture of the responsibilities and the legality of what our deputies are responsible for. The reason I asked Mr. Wren was I wanted to ask him was to find out the value of the outreach coordinator is if versus actually hiring another deputy, of which I thought would be a benefit to you by having another deputy with which you've asked for over the past few months so that you could increase what you're doing and it would make things better as far as public safety.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Gary.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I do agree that I think a second behavioral deputy would be a big asset to the city. The issue that we're dealing with on the outreach versus the enforcement, it's a funny line because our outreach people have talked to some of these same people 20 days in a row maybe or something, and they've always refused. It gets to the point where there's not a whole lot of return on the bucks for what they're doing. That's why I talked last meeting about some other things they could be doing to help us. On the other side, I think we have to get away from thinking of these people as homeless or trying to enforce anti-camping on them. I think that's going to get us into more trouble and lawsuits. I think what we have to look at is if they are breaking any laws, just like if I was breaking any laws. I talked to Commander Benson about this. He actually brought it up, but he made a lot of sense with it. Instead of going after people that are homeless, you go after them for blocking the sidewalk, camping. You know, camping can be blocking the sidewalk and not just anti-camping. But you've got to look at things like drunk in public. You can arrest me for being drunk in public, correct?
Give you a citation. Right.
Perfect. Citation is perfect because if they get enough citations, that should create a warrant, correct? If they don't go to court, and most of them won't go to court.
Correct.
And at some point, that way they would have a warrant out and they would be arrested. Public nudity, that's a good one. That's not anti-camping. That's great, we can use that. Drinking in public, everyone that I've seen out there, they have a case of beer. You just have to stand around long enough till they crack a few of them. Drinking in public is illegal. We ticket them for that. The behavioral deputies are trained on how to do that and how to deal with them on a little bit different level than our regular deputies. And the chief's right, we do have a lot of things going on in the city. And I believe the behavioral deputy can also help out if we had a serious situation in the city also, right?
Absolutely. So depending on, like I said, depending on the day and how busy we are, and like I mentioned, if we have someone take a vacation and it doesn't get filled on overtime or we have a sick call out, and guess what? That just placed me one deputy short throughout the city. So a deputy may have to cover two of those beats instead of one. And the behavioral health, unfortunately, like it or not, he may have to help out and cover and be that secondary deputy. I mentioned it before that as a city, we benefit to the fact that we have our county cars, our unincorporated Anaheim, our Midway City, and our Rossmore cars that are local to us, and numerous times we actually tracked it for a year period, how much they actually responded to our calls for service here and how many times they assisted. And the city benefits because it totals up to one full deputy. That's how much they helped us throughout the city. Now, do we ask for a return on cost? We don't. It's just a plus that we have our neighboring deputies and they assist because the city calls for it. That's how busy we are, and that's how tied up they get, and we need to handle those calls for services. And so they actually help us out, and you benefit by having an extra deputy without paying for it.
The other thing I don't think I mentioned was trespassing. That's a great one. And you can arrest me for trespassing. You don't have to be homeless to be trespassing.
And you forgot your shopping cart vendetta.
Shopping cart theft? I don't know. They give a ticket for that. I guess I don't. That's one of our city anyway, codes.
Thank you, Chief, very much. Appreciate that.
Thank you for your work.
Okay, you have any others on there? I have a couple. Okay, let's go to studies. You want to break that down again, please? We're doing, I think it was a $50,000 for a comp study?
Yeah, before we go to studies, do we want to get consensus on the skip loader? Do we have majority support on including that in the proposed budget? Okay, our public works manager will be happy with that. The studies is broken down, because I think that, just so you could talk about them separately, $50,000, for a citywide comp and class study.
Yeah, I'll comment on that. I think that we don't need a class and comp study in the city of Stanton. We have a litmus test already available. It's called retention and the ability to hire. If you don't have the ability to hire and you don't have the ability to retain, then that means that the amount of money that you're offering or paying is probably not in line. To give an example, this city has never been had its own union. And we were always blessed by not having a union, because when it came time to negotiate salaries, if we had a department that had to negotiate, that would cost us between $50,000 and $75,000. Well, to give the entire city a few years ago, 2% raise was $50,000. And so we were able to do that. The same thing with a work and comp study. I would rather see that $50,000 go into the employees, either as a COLA or as an increase in their salaries, or part of an increase in their salaries, rather than go out and find out that we probably don't pay as much as other cities and that our retention rate is probably affected by that. Go ahead.
I may follow up on that idea. If we were to take $50,000 that would have been assigned for that study and used it as a bump, how much more would?
Well, thank you, and I will thank our county manager for already computing that for me. A 1% change is $52,000, so we could increase our COLA from 7% to 8% and accommodate that request.
Especially since the CPI was 7.5%.
Well, not only that, look at our employees just made it through the pandemic, and then we're going to get another one coming up, and you know, it'd be kind of I don't call it a merit pay, but I think it's something that they really deserve during that period. Anyway, I'd like to bring
Like to see the study, but I could agree. If we do the money for the employees, I could agree.
Yeah, I'd like to see that brought back to the full council. But right now, I don't think I feel comfortable approving that. Now, the other thing is that every time I've done a study, no matter what board it's been on, I take the study, I pick it up, we put it on the shelf, and I never see it. And how much is that worth?
The study or?
Any studies that we're going to do.
Oh, right. Rhetorical. Understood. So do we have majority direction to not bring forward the comp and class study, but instead increase the COLA from 7% to 8% in the proposed budget for adoption in June?
Or maybe whatever we need to do when we take a look at our you know, we have a great HR director, and maybe we can kind of figure out where we are in the real world.
Mm-hmm.
We can look at our retention, we can look at exit, we can look at you know, we're a small city. We've only got a few employees. It'd be pretty easy for us to figure out where we are on the spectrum. And you know, Cal, what's that, open government? That's another great indicator. Are you guys okay with that?
I think we should approve it.
I think we should go with what you said and not do that study. And just
yes. Can we approve that tonight? What are the other two studies?
Okay, the other two studies, Director Lilly is here in the audience if there's further questions on them. $25,000 for a citywide parking study and $25,000 for a highest and best use study for the Bauman property if that acquisition should be successful.
Okay, my comment on that is twofold. No matter how much you study it, parking is endemic in Orange County. And no matter what the study says, it's going to say you don't have enough parking. And we are doing a pretty good job internally of making some adjustments in our community, whether it's parallel parking, restrictive overnight parking, using signage. And so I don't think we need to spend $25,000 to know something that we already know. If the future gets to a point where there may be a solution, and then we can either team up with another city, one of our neighboring seven cities, and that would save us $25,000. On the other one, which was the Bauman property, I don't think there's a rush to do that because right now we don't even own the Bauman property. And so I think, just personally, I'd like to just see us pull off the studies for a while and take that $100,000, it's available if we need it, use the 55 for the employees and put the other $45,000 back in the bank.
I'd like to hear why those two studies were suggested, what the value of those studies are at this time.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, the parking study is actually out of a great deal of input that we've received from our residential builders as well as our commercial businesses that believe that our parking standards in our city are too restrictive and actually cause them to be underparked in terms of the mathematics, but by today's ITE standards would show that those types of uses don't need as much parking as our code required. So rather than the site study that says, do we have enough parking in our city, it's more how we regulate parking and can accommodate parking with new development. Again, if that's not necessary or if that's not the direction of the council, happy to not do that. But that is something that our planning commission gave us feedback on, the development, as well as our residential builders. The second study for Bauman's Market would really be part of the negotiation if you decided to move forward. Highest and best use allows us to understand what the property could be used for, what the opposing side would say it could be used for, and how we can negotiate that. Again, if that's not a high priority, that's fine.
You know, Jennifer, one of the problems with parking is there's also mandates coming down from the state of California on there's certain parking requirements from the state that we also fall under. Isn't that correct?
So in terms of residential, I think is maybe what you're saying, right, when it comes to ADUs and other things.
And I think that's going to change drastically with the change in the demographics by some of the new current laws that are being passed on housing, whether it's arena numbers, whether it's ADUs or junior ADUs or things along those lines. And so to me, I think there's going to be a time and a place for that. I understand where you're coming from because it gives you more of a development guide, which I think is important. But I'm not really sure if it's a good time to spend, you know, that money at this point. But, you know, we'll find out when we all five get together. Anyway, thank you.
Any other?
I'd like to approve the two studies.
You want to do what?
No, you don't like the studies?
Well,
I was just asking her if she supported the studies.
You only need to get two votes, so.
So,
go ahead.
I mean, well, yeah, that's what I was asking.
So for the parking study, it doesn't actually say whether or not we need more parking. The reality is we need a lot of parking. How do we regulate parking? How do we accommodate parking development, right? So it'll help guide us better in terms of decision making and how what we require.
I think that's worth $25,000.
You know who would probably have that information is our traffic state licensed traffic engineer, Mr. Ames, who could probably give us a little bit of direction on that. He's not here tonight. You know, that's also a pretty good job for an intern if we happen to have an intern in that department.
It's probably more complicated than that.
I think an intern. Study.
Well, you know, you're picking on the younger generation. You're getting older. Look out.
Why don't we approve the parking study and not the other? We have two votes.
Yeah, go ahead. If you guys want to do that, it's fine, because it's going to have to come back to full council anyway. You got that? You okay with that? Okay, good.
Michelle, are you okay?
So, Mr. Mayor and members of the council, with three of us here, the three of you approve us including the parking study in the proposed adopted budget. But then we'll exclude the economic development study. Okay?
Sounds great.
The next is the HVAC system upgrades and repair. That's for this building. Mr. Jensen is here. If you need further details on that, it's equipment and software, $50,000.
Okay. We could increase the COLA and give our employees jackets.
I think for this one, we're not being filmed. Our quality of a life, we would like the temperature to be properly controlled.
Does the HVAC system upgrade also include like safer?
That mic does move up too. Perfect.
So no, it does not include any type of filters to the system. It's only for the software operating equipment and hardware equipment that's actually on the units itself. Currently, the units operate off of a proprietary hardware system that integrates into a non-proprietary system. So the communication system has a hiccup once in a while, and that's why we have problems controlling or regulating the HVAC within City Hall.
This only for City Hall or all?
This would only be for City Hall.
Oh, I think we need it, yes.
Pennies on this.
And then the computer software programs for the, again, $25,000 of that is an agenda management system, and the remainder is for a new recreation program software.
Will that give us the ability to do more automated stuff? As far as permitting, applications, record keeping, things along those lines?
Ms. Vasquez, can talk about what the agenda management system will involve?
Yes, so the agenda management system is for record keeping. It would help in addition to the record keeping system we currently already have in place, which so we have that. This is an alternative program that our city manager had requested to make an easier platform to integrate to possibly when we start televising, if that's the direction of the council, it would integrate with the system that's currently. So as far as record keeping, it would be an additional bonus to that.
The, what was that, what's that program that you, that we had looked at but you didn't like it, I think, record mm-hmm. keeping that we had, I can't think of the name.
Record keeping, I love what we have currently in place, which is LaserFeed.
It's which one?
LaserFiche.
Yeah, but then there was also something, Granicus.
Granicus, yes.
Now, Granicus, if we were to go and televise our programs here, Granicus is a necessity, and the PCTA would actually pay for that. But Granicus also is a good, has another side to it, which is records management. Some city clerks use it.
Correct.
I'm not sure if you were that happy with it. I can't remember.
We are not. We did do some research, and that's where we landed with LaserFiche. Mm-hmm. So that's who we currently have now. Granicus is an option. I know that PCTA is tied in with them for their televising portion, but we can always, it's not a an end-all, go-all. We don't have to go with Granicus for the agenda management software portion. It would be a little bit difficult if we don't, but again, that's something that we'd have to go out to an RFP, and whatever's lowest and best provided, we would go that route.
Yeah, the thing is that I was asking the question, which I'm trying to find out, is how much of the Granicus that's paid for by the PCTA is used by the city clerk for her things, or for the city televising of their council meetings?
So currently, unfortunately, I know that PCTA is aware that they have been paying for the televising portion of that out of their budget, and we have not been utilizing that portion of the budget because obviously we don't televise. So PCTA has been paying Granicus, and the city of Stanton and the clerk's office has not been using that. If we do the agenda management portion, PCTA would not be able to pay for that. That would have to come out of the city's budget.
Unless we had their other.
No. Only because it's a different model.
No, it's a different system. That's where I was curious to whether we're paying Westminster and $5.
Yeah, no.
Okay.
Or not.
Okay. Follow up for that. So it's $25,000 for agenda management record system. If we didn't make this work, how much time would you be wasting on efforts versus having software to help?
And that's currently, it was a request of our, our city manager wanted that option. The searchable feature to help online and things like that. It's a different kind of module. I'm in favor of either going with it, if that's a request of council and staff, and I'm in favor of what we have now. We can make better use of the system we currently have, but I've heard highs and lows, pluses and negatives about software.
Is this going to be an annual fee or is this a one-time purchase?
Most likely it would be a one-time purchase, but there will be annual costs associated with that purchase, upgrades, support, things like that.
And the value it brings is searchable features to our agendas and...
Correct. From the outside, through our webpage. Staff is able to search all of our resolutions, our staff reports, agendas through our laser fiche at this time. There's also the ability we can take that funding and have our laser fiche go to the cloud. Then in turn, that would have access to the website to allow the public to then search our database, our records and leads. So it's not something, it was a request, so we budgeted for it. And that's when I would then, if approved, go research, see what options are out there, what benefits staff would have for it, and things like that.
Would it automate the routing and the reviewal process among staff?
Would. Yes.
So it would save you time.
It could.
I think especially in this post-COVID world, we're working remote, even at the management level or staff level, you have people in, you have people out. Am I looking at the electronic copy? Am I looking at the paper copy?
Right.
Did I review it? Did Michelle Bannigan review the finance thing electronically? She didn't sign it on paper. It would really, I think, streamline that. So, for example, I review, since there's so many staff reports that impact the fiscal impact, Thursday morning, if I'm remote, Trish and I are doing a little reconciliation of which ones did finance review and which ones did not. So I think, you know, that would streamline it and just, you know, it is 2022 and to automate and make this a more efficient process.
And it's also, of course,
would be best practice.
It'd be best practice. Of course, it's up to staff how they'd like to proceed with that.
I'm in favor of paying for technology that can make their lives and their jobs easier, more efficient and more increases transparency and accountability so that the public can have more access to that one also. And then the recreation software, how is that different from what we're using now and what's the improvement aspect?
So we, thank you for your question. So we did do some preliminary findings. We're having some issues with our current software. User side, on the staff side, this one-time cost, about roughly over $12,000. Our annual cost, we found with a larger platform that has a couple other modules that will streamline some processes and improve the user experience, ends up being lower than our current model. On the customer service side, we've had some issues with them. They're on the East Coast. So all around, we're looking to just improve, you know, facilitate user, our customers, our residents, and staff experience as well.
As someone who has a recreation class, I will say that what we have now is great, and I would appreciate that.
Can we approve that?
Okay. So we have council direction to include that in the proposed adopted budget? Okay. And then lastly, the Greening Stanton project, as far as for 2223, beautifying the westbound part of that section of Chapman with shrubbery with our public benefit fees that we've collected.
I have some concerns with that because that street and sidewalk area is owned by Garden Grove.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We did get some clarification from the city engineer. And the description that was in the project sheet of our staff report does say eastbound. And in his memo today, and upon further research, when we asked him to confirm the city boundary, we will be modifying the final CIP project sheet. It's the westbound side, which is the city side, Stanton side of that street. So we won't be putting shrubbery on Garden Grove.
No,
right,
I realize that, but you realize that that street that is west of Wakeham is Garden Grove.
Yes.
The street,
yes.
And the street's Garden Grove, and the sidewalk's Garden Grove, and the fence is ours. So we're beautifying their sidewalk, fence, the school view with our plant, our water, and our maintenance.
So particularly, it's not the Greening Stanton project in general, it's maybe this particular location. Because in his project sheet, the city engineer, just to add this project to the city's seven-year plan, he identified the project he would do in 22-23, which was Chapman, which there may not be consensus on. But in 23-24, let me get my glasses on, He proposed beautifying. He proposed beautifying westbound Catella in front of the La Lampara Mobile Home Park, and that would be about $150,000. So if the collective from the council members who are here tonight is, we do have this $1.2 million in public benefit, public facility fees that we've collected from, you know, three large development projects so far that can be used for beautifying different parts of the city. Maybe we don't have consensus on the Chapman, but maybe we have consensus on Lampara Mobile Home Park, and that's what we bring the proposed budget for, the 22-23 adoption.
I don't want to kill the Chapman project, but I don't see why we don't reach out to Garden Grove, Mr. Stiles or Mr. Jones, and ask them if they'd be willing to share the cost of that, because it not only beautifies Stanton, but it beautifies Garden Grove. You got to remember, even though we're paying for water and maintenance, it also eliminates graffiti. It's kind of tough to graffiti on a wall that has plants on it. So that's right. Going to save our Public Works Department a lot of effort also, which I think is a good thing. I don't mind doing these, but I think that if it's, because that would really help that area, but I think we might want to just at least make that phone call. What are they going to say? The worst thing they say is no, but if you don't ask, you're never going to know.
Okay.
So are we going to move forward with this?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So move forward with the proposed city engineer plan on Chapman, but between now and adopted budget, reach out to Garden Grove if they might want to share in the cost of it, and we can report that to council in that time of adoption. You could choose to approve it with or without their support. Okay. So that completes our one-time expenditure request. That completes our overview of the general fund. We do want to highlight a couple of expenditure requests outside of the general fund that just to bring to your attention that were called out in the staff report. We're on slide 10. That the ARPA fund does include $1.1 million. This is the cost of funding 12 city staff positions that are limited term positions from previous council direction, as well as the two positions from the Orange County Sheriff's Department that, again, the city council gave previous direction to fund with ARPA. So the fiscal year 22-23 impact is $1.1 million. That will be a little bit different when we propose for adopted budget, because we will have to push that 8% COLA across. And then we do have some fleet purchase requests that aren't being funded by the general fund. One is a $60,000 state-fed truck with liftgate that would be funded from our fleet maintenance internal service fund. The current one is in disrepair. It's very old and needs to be replaced. And then we have $90,000 from the Air Quality Management District Fund to purchase two hybrid Toyota RAV4 vehicles. Those would be for the two new positions in the building division, the building official and the building inspector, as well as Public Works is going to do a pilot program, a lease program, to lease a vehicle, a hybrid vehicle, for our information technology specialist individual who is housed at the corporate yard but is driving around to the various city facilities to maintain our IT systems. So to allocate a vehicle for him. Can any questions about these requests?
Yeah, can we make that one? Can we make that vehicle a stake bed truck?
The one for the IT specialist. Do they make those hybrid, Mr. Jensen? Otherwise, if they do, if not, we could make that change in a budget that's brought forward for adoption. But we would. We would switch the funding from the AQMD funding to the fleet maintenance if that is the direction.
Scott, I've been around a long time. It's apparent that we could use a stake bed truck, but that's your call because that's your department. So I just thought I'd throw that out there.
Yeah, not a problem. I don't know if they make a hybrid vehicle for that. I do know that there is a electric vehicle. But the cost between the electric vehicle stake bed is a difference of about $70,000. So electric vehicle is around $163,000 for that same vehicle in a diesel or gasoline engine vehicle would be around $48,000 to $52,000. So there's a possibility of using AQMD money possibly for the electric vehicle, but at what expense would you want the funds for something that's a bit overpriced?
And we are going, one of the fleet purchases is replacing the current stake bed truck with liftgate. So that would meet that need. And then for the information technology specialist and the building staff to have the RAV4s and then the leased vehicle for the information technology staff.
Yeah, I think that we definitely need a new stake bed truck, though. I mean, that's just from an observation that I see.
So. In addition to the one we're already replacing, so you're saying two?
No, just one.
Oh, one? Oh, yes. Okay. So, okay. Okay, yeah. So we will bring forward these purchases.
The vehicle for the information technology specialist,
yes.
What hours will that vehicle be used? It's being rented, right?
Well, it would just be like any other lease. If you lease a vehicle, you have that throughout the whole year, and you just pay the company. Martin works a 410 work schedule, like the rest of city staff. I know he does also work overtime when that need is there. So I'm assuming just like every other city fleet vehicle, it would be available all year long and to his use when he's available.
And
when
he going to be the only person using it, or would anyone else be able to use it?
So I think we technically have them assigned to an individual, but the pool cars are available to an employee if needed.
We currently have, you can correct me, Mr. Jensen, two or three pool cars that are available to all staff right now.
I believe that there are two Clarities that are carpool here at City Hall. And then I believe, looking at the RAV4s, basically just being able to deliver hardware and whatnot to City Hall for the information technology. So if we could get a vehicle for a stake bed, fantastic.
Okay, that completes the operating budget. For our capital improvement program, this fiscal year for 2223, we're proposing new funding of $4.6 million. That is broken out between more than half of that being for street projects. $2.1 million of the $2.4 million is just our annual street rehab program. The next funding type is park projects, is about 37% at $1.7 million. This includes $500,000 for Premier Park renovation. If you recall, in the mid-year in March, Council allocated funds for the design of that park, and this $500,000 is now for the construction piece of that park. Out of that $500,000, about $202,000 is state park grant funds, and the rest is park and loo fee funds. Orangewood Parkette, the construction, again, Council at mid-year funded the design of Orangewood Parkette. In fiscal year 22-23, we're putting the $850,000 budget, which is 100% funded by the earmark grant for the Parkette, and an additional $182,000 for additional funding that's needed to complete the Family Resource Center Improvements Projects. It's short by the updated engineer's estimate by that amount. The last piece of the CIP is a placeholder, we're calling it a placeholder, of $550,000 for annual sewer rehabilitation projects. The CIP project sheet is kind of vague on those. While the update of the sewer master plan is being done, once that plan is complete, it will identify the need. And so the city engineer would just like some capital money in the budget so that we're prepared for it when the master plan's done. Any questions about the CIP plan for next year?
Quick question.
Yes.
The $850,000 that we got from Paul's office, does any of that money go into crashing into that dead end or any sort of improvement to prevent that from happening again?
Design of the park, dude?
That's what I'm hoping, but I really don't know.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure in regards to that. I know part of the design process is to add additional bollards behind the existing guardrails in the design process of that. So we're we are constantly working on trying to improve visibility at that site to hinder people from driving through it.
And Mr. Ames does have an ATP plan for that site, and that would be in conjunction that phase. I don't believe the low and ball earmark is allocated for that.
That's just
for the park. But I did want to, we talked about it, Mr. Ames, and because of the recent issues, he does want to come and give council an update on some of those measures, traffic calming measures and other
and
ways
we have
that
funding
we can reduce.
Implement those traffic calming measures.
We will come back with funding options for that.
Okay, perhaps when we bring the proposed budget item for adoption, we will make sure that the project sheet that's included for Orangewood Parkette just beefs up the project description a little bit to kind of thoroughly detail out what the current $850,000 construction would in fact construct.
Can you go back to CIP?
Yes.
Yeah. That's good. How much of the parks project is funded by park and lieu money versus development fees?
Okay, that is summarized on attachment C, page 2 of the staff report. And out of this $1.7 million, it is about $1 million is funded by grants. And the other balance is funded by park and lieu fees, about $480,000.
Okay.
And of course, we're trying not to commit, have the council commit too much funding of the park and lieu fees pending the completion of the park master plan. But the premier park renovation project and the Family Resource Center Improvements Project are already projects that are underway that the council already gave direction, especially at the mid-year with the Premier Park, to move forward. So with our proposed plan for 2022-23, we are asking for about $500,000 of our park and lieu fees to be committed just to those two projects.
Does Premier Park include a new security program like a fencing or something?
Did you say security program?
Well, you know, we do have quite a bit of fencing. I was just curious whether Premier, to me,
it includes, according to the project sheet in attachment C, it is replacing all of the equipment out there. So the playground, installing new rubber play surface at the playground, new swings, new landscaping and lighting, and a new water fountain.
Yeah, because that's a short run for a fence there, and that would give security to the mobile home park. It gets a lot of complaints. Well, you know, that's what we do with a lot of our parks. It's the world we live in. You know, we had to actually increase the height of the back of that wall just to keep people from cutting across through the mobile home park.
I can comment. So it is in the design phase right now. The consultant is reviewing. We did about maybe right in the middle of COVID did have a community meeting and got some feedback from residents there in addition to a play structure. They were looking for some security features, some potential lighting, improvements to the walkway, more visibility in certain areas. So that was part of the scope, I believe, in the design phase. But again, Mr. Ames can come back and maybe update the description of the project sheet.
Correct. For the packet that we bring for budget adoption, we will have Mr. Ames review and modify the description to clarify whether it includes all of the security measures. It does include lighting, but I don't know about the fencing. It's not spelled out. And if it needs to, then we could have him update his engineer's estimate, and that'll be reflected in the CIP budget that's requested for next fiscal year for council to consider. So in conclusion, the purpose of the study session is just to get input from the public and from the City Council on the proposed budget for fiscal year 22-23, for Council to provide us direction on the changes you would like from what is in tonight's packet, and then to direct us to proceed with your changes to bring this back for adoption at your next meeting, which is June 14th. That completes our presentation.
Chief Alday, do we have someone from the finance department here tonight?
We have Mr. Dwight Tippett.
Great.
Dwight.
And you are?
Dwight Tippett.
Well, thank you. And your role is?
I'm a law enforcement contract manager.
OK. Okay, great.
You can move that microphone all the way up if you can. Hey.
Thank you. So we got the thing. Couple of things. We had about a $900,000 increase. Oh, is that pretty close to the tabulation that you guys gave?
Correct. So the total increase is $928,445.
Okay. What percent of that increase was affected by the supervisorial vote for a 7% salary increase recently?
So from our assumptions page, the ACLEM, which is the Association of County Law Enforcement Managers, is getting a 3.5% cost of living. The Association of the Orange County Deputy Sheriffs, AOCDS, is a 3.5% cost of living. The Orange County Managers Association is getting a 3% cost of living. And the general unit of the Orange County Employees Association is getting a 3.5% cost of living.
OCEA was what?
3.5%.
Okay. So they basically averaged about 3.25, something like that?
Close to that.
Okay. So that's not cumulative. It's just those are the, that's the cap was around 3, right?
Correct. So that's
going. How did you end up doing that when the COLA was, is like we just discussed, between 7 and 7.5?
I'm not sure which COLA
I'm
you're
asking you. The reason I'm asking that is, are we going to expect an increase here shortly again?
Well, this is the last year of our contract negotiations, so this will be set for starting 7/1/2022 through 6/30 of 2023. This is the final year of the contract negotiations. The county will be going into new negotiations with all of these bargaining units starting for the next year of 7/1/2023. So they have not gone into negotiations yet. I don't know what the COLA may be that's going to come out of those negotiations, but that will be upcoming. They call it the Super Bowl of negotiations because it's all the bargaining units going into negotiations at the same time. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. And then what percent of that increase was because of the extras that are being provided to the city that were billed for, whether it's communication, helicopter, body cameras, you know, things like that?
So this year we are adding body-worn camera. Since we're working with our second estimate, we have not gotten final direction on where we wanted to go from Stanton. We did not complete a full variance analysis until Stanton decided on what they wanted to do. Want to move forward with the status quo, then we'll come back at the city council meeting with a full variance analysis, show what each of the different line items were as a percentage. But I don't have that tonight. I can give you the total increase for the body-worn cameras. Body-worn cameras we have listed in as $355,164. You were paying $50,422, which included the patrol vehicle system. That's now going to be all rolled into one system, so that's a difference of $304,742 as an increase in of body.
And what is the cost of the new portable ID equipment?
I don't have the number for portable ID.
We got that from Cal ID. I'm sorry, IRAN, from the crime lab committee. And I think it was, I think, Chief, do we have two or three of those units? Two? Okay. And were we expected to get another one, do you know?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And how's that working out?
Great.
Okay. So you, the more the merrier, right, for that? Okay, good. Also along those same lines, weren't we a test city for the body cams?
I'm not sure if you were a test city. I know your Belinda, I believe, was supposed to go online. But all county agencies, or all county contract partners, are now online.
Chief, how do you feel about the city and your personnel having body cameras? Could you come up and just give us a little update, please? Thank you.
As far as the body-worn camera, yes. The idea was to be one of the first two contract cities to receive it, but unfortunately we had some logistic issues with AT&T and the fiber optics getting that set up in our station. And so we became one of the last contract cities to get it. But as far as them going forward and actually having him. It's been a asset to not only our deputy, but because every contact that we have with it's going live with the body worn camera. It clears a lot of complaints or vice versa. We have a deputy that may be doing wrong. We have
It also helps protect the rank and file when they're out in the field in a way of their side of what actually transpired, I believe, right? As well as the other people too, right? And thank you, Chief. And sir, how much was that gonna cost the city?
So body-worn camera for next year is a line item of $355,160.
And that, is that a one-time expense, or we have to have a service cost, or do you service them? Are
that,
they now
that will
proven?
That will be ongoing. So there's back end that's built into that cost. So it's not only for the ongoing cost of that, but it's also for data storage, as well as staff to redact any video that may need to get redacted if someone does a Public Record Act request, you know, to redact people in the background. Or it's anticipated that this may be getting more data requests as defense attorneys are asking for the different body-worn camera footage. It's going to be more work on the back end to pull that data, as well as to go through it and back to civilians or people not involved in the incident.
Yeah, you know, the city doesn't pay for the weapon of choice or the ammo, but why? What's the justification us for paying for part of a uniform or the what the deputies are using? I mean, why is the county not paying that cost?
Well, our goal is 100% cost recovery. So anything that is going to cost the county, it's going to get passed on to the city of Stanton for cost recovery. We don't take money off the city. We're not allowed to by law. It's just to recover our costs to provide the services to the city.
Yeah, there is quite a bit of money left in that equipment account, you know, like where the portable IDs come out of. Did you ever hear from our city manager on his position on this?
I did.
Chief, did you hear anything from our city manager? Okay, so it's kind of still up in the air, right? We haven't signed on yet, right?
Well, body-worn camera is implemented.
I know it's implemented, but you said that you were going to ask whether the city's position on it or anything?
I don't believe that it was given to each city on whether or not they're going to be implementing body-worn camera. I think as the sheriff's department, they made a decision that all sheriff deputies were going to be with body-worn camera.
Okay, and my last and final question, I thank you for your patience, is that overhead. What percent of our total budget is classified by the Orange County Sheriff's Department, Finance Department as overhead?
So there's different areas that are classified as overhead. You have a department overhead, a division overhead. So in this year's budget, department overhead is $331,897. And division overhead, which is North Patrol Division, is $792,059.
Okay, and what effect does the North Division have overhead-wise to the cost to the city of Stanton?
So North Patrol is going to be an increase of 37% this year, 37.45%.
Okay, and so explain to my fellow council members what we're paying for, please.
Okay, so this year in our assumptions document, there is four positions that were added to North Patrol overhead, and for Stanton, for special officer twos, it went from 0.5 to 4.
Okay. Now, do you see any in the short term, before we get back together again with you, any significant increase in cost to the city that we need to be prepared for?
If you say that you would not like to make any changes to staffing, the number that we have tonight will be what will go final. second estimate.
Okay, I'm sure you heard tonight that we are entertaining now having to pay for a special deputy for the, in our homeless program. And so that would probably be the only thing. Is that the only thing that we are thinking of right now?
Do you mean just shifting the current staffing level from our grant fund to the general fund, or do you mean you want to add a second behavioral specialist?
So that's in the budget already.
Not the second behavioral specialist.
Just the first one.
Just the same staffing plan as now is our $928,000 total contract cost. So.
Any questions, guys? You have one? Sure.
It sounds like we did end.
That would have to, well, that would have to be computed by the county, because there's just not just the salary cost, but any equipment training. There's all these ancillary costs for each deputy. It's just not taking the deputy line from our second estimate. But I do want to just caution the council when we're talking about replacing, we're talking about a one-time cost of a capital project that would be one time versus adding a body in every single year, knowing one fiscal year from now there's going to be who knows what the COLA increase is for that bargaining unit. That will be a forever cost of the city versus a one-time capital project. So it's kind of, in my mind, apples and oranges if the council wants to collectively direct the county to move forward.
Let's not move forward at this time.
Your name again, please?
Dwight.
Oh, Dwight. Oh, that I've heard. Okay. I want to let you know that this is the best overhead presentation that I've ever gotten since 1988. You are the first person to be honest with us and tell us exactly, penny for penny, where that amount comes from, because that aloof overhead has always been aloof. But now I really appreciate the fact that you were able to substantiate that cost to the city, and I have a very clear understanding of it. So thank you very much. Chief, you brought the right guy in this time. Thank you. Okay, we'll bring it back to conclusion.
Hello. So staff recommendation is that City Council direct staff to modify the proposed budget based on the discussions we had this afternoon and bring the budget back for council adoption at June 14th, 2022.
Okay, well, the good news is that our two colleagues might want to tweak something, so that'll give them an opportunity to do that. Or they may want to spend money, or they may want to spend less. So I think we got a good start. Tell them that we spent 7 hours toiling over this, and if they make any changes, we'll have another seven-hour meeting. How's that?
Sounds good.
Okay, this is a receive. Is this a receive and file?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so we don't really need to vote on it, do we?
No, sir.
Okay, good. All right, thank you all for being here, staff. That's an excellent report from the finance department. Ladies, you did a great job. You look good in that seat. Chris, you can come back anytime. Okay, and thank you for the rest of our staff for being here tonight. That was great. You guys always do a good job. Okay, let's go get ready for a real meeting now. Okay. Anyway, I forgot, I do have to have public. Do we have to have public on this?
Not your study session.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah. Just go for it, yeah.
We do it?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to open the public. If anybody would like to comment on this, unless you're a newspaper reporter, then you can't. Okay.
She's kidding.
Wow. Yes. Anyone.
That's right. Speak now or forever hold your peace. But they'll get us with a pen. Don't worry about it. All right. Anyway, good night, everyone, and thank you for being here.